Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single family homes all the way up to 600 plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And on today's show, I'm going to talk about Zillow today. And I realize that I'm one of those guys that might bash Zillow from time to time. I am one of those guys that will do that because I just don't necessarily agree 100% with everything that Zillow does. But I cannot ignore the fact that Zillow is a massive organization with a lot of people working for it, and it even has its own research arm that, to be honest with you, produces some pretty decent data. So I can't beat up Zillow all the time. I can only beat them up when they deserve to be beat up, like when they're trying to monopolize the real estate market. But to be honest with you, Zillow kind of beat themselves up because they failed to understand that markets, especially real estate markets, are very localized. Very, very localized. And when you come in from a, you know, what do you call it, a 40,000 foot approach, and you try and figure everything out all at once, and it all kind of blows up in your face. Well, that's what happened with Zillow when they were trying to monopolize the market. So I think Zillow really should, in Al's opinion, this is just Al's opinion. I'm sure the CEO is not listening to me. But if they are listening to me, I think they should focus on the areas where they have a lot of strength. Yeah, I think that they've done a really good job with bringing information to the forefront. I mean, you think about it. Back in the Flintstone days, that's my analogy for when I was a younger man. When I wanted to go buy real estate, say in the 1980s, I had to check out a couple of different sources. I had to take a look at the newspaper. You remember the newspaper? You used to like pick it up and read it. And if you read the whole thing and you set it down and you put it in the trash can because we didn't have recycling back then, everything went in the trash. And you looked at your fingertips and your fingertips were all black from the newsprint that rubbed off. Okay, that was one source for you to find real estate. People that wanted to sell real estate that were not interested in being represented by a real estate agent would sell real estate themselves. They would take out an ad in the newspaper because Craigslist didn't exist back then. No, the internet was just hardly being started. Okay, so people would, and we called them FSBOs. I think they're still called FSBOs today. FSBO is an acronym for sale by owner. FSBO, for sale by owner. FSBO. Yeah, okay. So people that wanted to sell their own property would just take an ad in the newspaper, and you would call them up and you would find out, you know, what kind of house is it and how big is it and where's it at and what are you asking? You know, you get certain information, and then you would drive over to the property. Yeah, you would drive over to the property. If you didn't know the area, you would kind of check out the area a little bit, and then you'd look at the property, and then you'd go in and take a look, and you'd make a decision as to whether or not you wanted to buy from that person. Or you could do it a different way. You could actually have a real estate agent involved in the process and have the real estate agent take a lot of the burden off of your shoulders as far as identifying properties that would work for you in your price point. See where I'm going with this? There are a lot of things that you would have to do. Now, back in the 80s, realtors actually had the multiple listing service electronically. Yeah, there was actually a massive database where, and most multiple listing services are local, and the real estate agents that were part of the realtor network, I think this is how it all works, And if I've got it wrong, please don't hold me accountable for the exact truth. I'm just trying to share with you how difficult it used to be to locate property. Now, if you had a realtor on your team, it was a little bit easier because the realtor had actually two sources that they could go to. One was that electronic multiple listing service if they had it in the particular area where you were at. It didn't exist everywhere in the country, but it did exist in most markets. It really did. The other thing they had was something called the MLS book. Yeah, it was the multiple listing book, I guess it came out weekly. So the realtors would have information in their hands on every piece of property that was either active for sale or was pending sale or had closed escrow and other information too. So these books, I mean, they weren't as thick as telephone books. Remember telephone books, right? But they were pretty thick. So when you use these different resources, you were able to kind of hone in on properties that you were interested in buying. Okay. What I'm getting at is the buying process was labor intensive. It was real labor intensive. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, somewhere out of the beautiful internet arose an organization called Zillow. And for the first time, Zillow actually created for us, consumers and investors, it created for us a interactive visual marketplace. Yeah, we could actually go online, we could look at properties, we could check out the area, we could see what properties sold for in the area. There was a ton of information that all of a sudden became readily available to you and me. And when information becomes more readily available, that information gets used and that information gets put to work. So the point I want to make is that I think Zillow has done some great things. I really do. So I'm going to stop picking on them. As a matter of fact, what we're going to talk about today is their prediction for 2022 that we're going to have the hottest housing market ever? Wow, hold on.
You can't be financially free if you're psychologically imprisoned by disabling belief systems.
Are you ready to break free from your disabling belief systems about money, real estate, retirement, and financial freedom? Then join us for Lifestyles Unlimited's live online free workshop. Learn the belief system that thousands of people like you have used to break free from corporate America and create the lives they have always wanted. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedFreeWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. All right. So let's talk about some of the research that Zillow did, because I'll be honest with you, they have way more money to throw at research than I do. I'm one of those guys that will take a look at the research they do. I will look at the information that they present and I will qualify it. Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I qualify it. In other words, I don't arbitrarily go 100% with what the researcher tells me. I want to make my own informed decisions. Now, I have no reason to believe that a researcher would ever try and blow smoke up my chimney. I really don't think researchers try and do that. But researchers are human beings, and human beings are prone to error. We are prone to error as human beings. So that's why I qualify the information. So as we're going to break, I was telling you that Zillow was making a prediction for some of the, I don't know, the hottest housing markets. I think I said the housing market in 2022 is going to be the hottest ever. But I didn't fully qualify that statement. I didn't qualify the statement because I didn't tell you everything that Zillow is suggesting in this article. So you're probably wondering, Well, what is it, Al? What is it that they're suggesting? Well, real simple. They believe 2022, based on their research, will fall just short of record-breaking levels. That's what their predictive analysis suggests. So what does that mean to you? Okay. 2021, in spite of what most people thought was going to happen to the real estate market, 2021 was a pretty phenomenal year for real estate. I mean, it was phenomenal. We saw some of the hottest housing markets in the United States, period, hands down. I mean, Zillow has this thing that they call the Home Value Index, and that thing was lighting up like 4th of July. Yeah, so 2021, because of the weirdness that the market was pushed into, because there was demand for housing, yet the people that owned the housing weren't interested in letting the housing go. They wanted to retain the housing. Therefore, no housing came on the market. Inventories were low, and that's part of what's pushed this pricing up. Now, inflation has a piece of it, but I don't think the price increases that we saw were due primarily to inflationary pressures. I don't believe that to be true. I think rent increases are definitely being influenced by inflationary pressures, but I don't think home values necessarily were. What was really happening was just that supply and demand curve. And I think we got ourselves to a place where we're at the new normal. Yeah, we are at the new normal. So a house that, let's say, was worth $175,000 a year ago is potentially worth $225,000 today. Do you know why I know this to be true? Well, because I just put a property on the market last week. I actually did it, I think I did it Thursday night so that it would be available for Friday showings and through the weekend. And we put the house on the market. We bought it for $174,000, okay, so follow my logic, okay, $1,000 less than the price point that I told you, paid $174,000 for it. Today's value of that price, because we were looking at the comps last night to justify our pricing, we put the property on the market for $225,000. We received something like, I don't know, dozen and a half showings and six offers. Six offers in 48 hours, literally 48 hours. Now, those types of offers were all different. Now, the one offer was from somebody that was a wholesaler. In other words, what they did was they offered me all cash. They would close on my property. I think they gave me 7 days or something like that. And no strings attached. But of course, they came in about $20,000 lower than what I was asking. So what that tells me is that if I were desperate, I could take that offer, but I'm not desperate and the house is in good condition. And to be honest with you, that wholesaler is really not doing anything great because once they tack their fee on, they're going to be trying to flip that contract for the same price that I was offering the property for sale. The difference is they get to control the offer process. And I'm not interested in that. So that offer went away. That left me with five actually really good offers. Two offers came in as conventional financing. One offer came in as FHA financing. In other words, somebody that was looking to buy the home as an owner-occupant. And then two other offers came in with VA financing. So we took a look at all five of the offers. Now, every single one of the offers came in at least at what we were asking. One offer came in $5,000 higher. Another offer came in $15,000 higher. So, which one would you take? Which one would you take? Well, on the surface, the easiest one to take, to be honest with you, was the one that was $5,000 above asking price. They were coming in to do a, look like an owner-occupied conventional financing. In other words, they were offering to put 10% down, and they would take out a loan for 90% of value, and they had a lender that was willing to do that for them. And, you know, we were leaning towards that particular offer, but the buyer got cold feet overnight. For whatever reason, they withdrew the offer. So either they decided that they couldn't buy the property, or maybe they had multiple offers going on multiple properties, and maybe they won two of the properties and they just chose the other one, so they walked away from mine. Not a problem, right? So what we decided was we were going to go for the offer that was $15,000 higher than our asking price. Now, there's some caveats there, and I just got to tell you what those caveats are. This is not me trying to be Zillow and inflate the price. So here's what I'm dealing with primarily. I have an offer that's $15,000 above my asking price. That's a good problem. That's a really good problem. And here's the rest of the problem. It's an offer from a veteran, somebody who's currently serving in the armed forces that has their VA entitlement, and they want to buy it on VA, and they're willing to pay me as much as they can because they've figured out that if they don't go as high as they possibly can on their asking prices, they've probably been losing out. As a matter of fact, when they sent the offer in, there was a nice little letter that was written to us telling us that they really love the property and things like that. Okay, so to make a long story short, we had to do some market research. Yeah, we had to do some market research because I knew the property was going to appraise for $225, but can I get it to $240? That's a dilemma. When we come back from the break, I'll tell you what we decided. Stick around.
Lifestyles Unlimited member Kirby talks about his experience at the two-day Financial Freedom Seminar.
2008 was my first full year as a financial advisor. 2009, stark contrast, my paychecks went down about 80%. I started looking for avenues to grow my wealth, grow my income. I found Lifestyles Unlimited. I joined in 2010. I started investing in both single family and multifamily. Between 2010 and 2015, I bought five houses. The two-day class, they teach you to buy four houses to make your first $250,000. I bought five and I made about $60,000 each. That was another $300,000 that I made because of real estate.
You've heard us and our members on the radio. Now join the Lifestyles Unlimited team in a city near you or online from the comfort of your own home for the Financial Freedom Seminar. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Use promo code 2022. Save 60% off the regular price, plus get a second year of membership for free. Register now at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Limited seating, unlimited potential. Register today at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com.
Warning, listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. All right, I gotta jump back to Zillow before I tell you what we did with the offer and acceptance process on this rental house that we're selling. So Zillow, I got to give them props for research. I do have to give them props for research because when I go to Zillow and I look at all of their Zillow research stuff, there's a lot of good information there. There's a lot of good information you could actually use there also. Just make sure you qualify the information. That's all I'm telling you. So Zillow believes that 2022 is still going to be a really, really good year for home value appreciation. They predict that we'll see about 11% across the board in home value growth. Okay, that's still pretty aggressive. Now, it's not as aggressive as we had in 2021, where Zillow projected, believe it or not, a 19.5% across the board growth. And I think we did better than that. Now, the article I'm reading does not give me that piece of information, and I didn't go out and find it for you, but think about it. over 20% appreciation in a one-year period for real estate, especially for real estate that is subject to appraisals. That's pretty aggressive growth. That is very aggressive growth. And here's the thing. If you were invested in the real estate market, say 2 years ago, you would have experienced all of that growth. The reason Tina and I are selling that one particular house is because it made its targets that we set for. Remember I was talking about goal setting yesterday? Okay, so this particular property met its target. We made a decision when we bought it that we would own it and operate it. It was producing good cash flow for us. I think I was getting something like, I don't know, $450 a month in passive income that was coming off of that property. But because the property went up and hit our price target, our five-year price target, mind you, because remember, when I do my calculations for future values of property, I go with a very conservative number. I go with 3.5%. That's what I expect the growth rate to be in the markets that I choose to invest in. And it's totally fine. And when those properties do better than that, what happens to Tina and me is we sit down and we take a look at the targets that we set for ourselves and we ask ourselves some questions. We ask questions like, is this a good time to sell? And according to all the research that I'm reading, yeah. Yeah, it's actually a really good time to sell. And based on what I've told you about this particular house that I'm selling, there's still a lot of demand out there. I put a property on the market for $225, and I got six offers. Okay, one technically I got five offers, then I got a wholesale offer contract, so I made that one go away. But five ready, willing, and able buyers, each who had met with a qualified lender, and each who got a letter from their qualified lender saying that they qualified for the purchase price that they made in their offers. Now, I will tell you this price point I'm in, this $225 price point, this is a pretty aggressive price point because if I mention three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage in great condition with a nice fenced backyard on a quiet street that's basically a cul-de-sac, Californians are thinking, that's a $900,000 property where I live. New Yorkers are thinking, well, that's an $850,000 property where I live. Texans are thinking, well, if I'm in Austin, that's probably a $600,000 property, but because this property's down in San Antonio, it's a $225,000 property. That's what it's worth in the San Antonio market. I accepted the offer from the veteran for $240,000. So I've got a problem on my hands. You want to know what the problem is? I have to convince an appraiser that I've never met and probably will never meet because I won't meet the person at the house. I won't do it. I'll send my realtor to do it. And the appraiser, even though I could provide them comps of recently sold properties that I would like that appraiser to use when they do their appraisal, I have to hope the appraiser pulls the comps that I would want to give that person because most appraisers would say thank you very much and they would take your comps and they would throw them in the trash. And the reason for that is an appraiser is supposed to be a disinterested third party. All they're trying to do is establish value for the property. So, at the $225 price point, I knew that that was a perfect price. I know for a fact that property is going to appraise for $225. Hands down, $225. So when Bonnie came over to our house yesterday. Bonnie's my realtor. And when she came over to our house yesterday to go over all the offers, she pulled up all of the data that she has from the multiple listing service. And we looked at everything that had recently sold in the neighborhood. Now, there were two properties in there that are pretty close to my property. They're a little bit smaller. They're basically in the same neighborhood, and they're not in as good of condition as my property is. So if the appraiser decides to choose those comps, in my opinion, based on what I know about appraisals, the appraiser will make adjustments when they compare the less desirable property to my property. So in other words, what he's going to have to do, he's going to have to make adjustments so that the properties become equal. So that might mean, you know, if I have granite countertops, which I do, maybe that adds $1,000 onto the valuation of the lesser priced property. Are you following me here? So what we're trying to do is we want that appraiser, if he chooses the lower price comps, to be able to bracket up. Now, I also know that there are two other comps that sold literally in the next neighborhood. Okay, the next neighborhood is literally across the street from the neighbor that's on the backside of this property. Does that make sense? Okay, so these are all properties that were all built in a similar time frame. They're all similar square footages and things like that. But these other two properties, they have higher comps. One sold for $259. Now, the lot size is bigger. It's like on a third of an acre. I'm on a standard R1 lot, okay? So what does that mean? Okay, they've got more ground space. So the appraiser is going to have to make an adjustment for that. He's going to have to reduce the value of that property based on whatever that additional land is worth. So that's going to bring that property value down. But when you look at all the other comparables, my property is actually 30 square feet bigger. And when you compare all the other amenities, they're all pretty much the same. Now, there's another property that closed escrow, and it's the same size lot. It's literally almost literally the same house, and it sold for $245. And Bonnie picked up the phone. She called the agent that had that property listed, and she said, "Hey, I just have a question. We're doing a market survey. Your property came up. Did that property appraise?" And he said, "It did. It appraised for $245. Now, the reason she called on that one was because this particular property was in what's called a pending status. And we needed to get the intel because the intel wasn't readily available. But one professional to another professional got the intel that I was looking for. Talk about market research. So we're going to break. When we come back from the break, shall I pick on Zillow or shall I tell you what I'm doing? Let's do both.
Del Wamsley on the economy and politics.
What happens if the economy turns around and goes back down now the Democrats are in power, or inflation becomes rampant and all of a sudden it becomes very difficult to do business? I was listening to an economist the other day, and he pulled out this chart of GDP. He said, "Look, here's what I want you to do." He said, "Tell me anywhere from 1950 to 2021 where the Democrats took power and where the Republicans took power." He said, "Point it out for me." And the truth of the matter is, you can't tell.
If you're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what the politicians are going to do, or waiting to see what the economy's going to do, if you're trying to predict the future, stop. Politicians and the economy have no bearing on your success or failure. Only you do. Register for the next live online free workshop. We'll unfold the map to retirement in 5 years or less, regardless of what's going on in the world. It's the same proven strategies we've been using for 30 years through every political party and economic cycle you can think of. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. So Zillow is predicting 6.35 million homes to be sold this year. 6.35 million to be sold. And that's compared to an estimate that they came up with last year of 3.12 million. And we all know what happened last year, right? Yeah, there was no 6.12 million properties sold last year. No, it didn't happen. It didn't happen because of market forces. Yeah, Zillow, in all of their size and all of their stature and all with all of their smart employees, because I'm pretty confident Zillow hires some pretty sharp people. I know I like to pick on Zillow, but I think there's some really great people that probably work for Zillow that do some really great work, and I tend to be the beneficiary of their research. So I can't really pick on those guys because I keep going back to them as a source. You ever notice that? Yeah. So I guess it's a love-hate relationship. So the problem that Tina and I have right now is we need to make sure that we've got a fighting chance to get this appraisal in at 240. Now, the particular type of loan that the buyer is using is a VA. Yeah, they're coming in literally no money down, which is completely permissible if you're a qualified veteran who has earned the right to a VA entitlement. It allows you to buy a principal residence. You could actually buy up to a fourplex, believe it or not, with no money down. Now, you have to be careful when you buy stuff no money down, because the leverage that you have to put on the property, because now you're leveraging 100% of the property, not just like, say, 80%. The leverage, if you were doing it for investment purposes, by the way, you'd have to be an owner-occupant. So if you did a fourplex, you'd have to live in one of them. The leverage might be strong enough that it blows up your cash flow. That's the real concern you have to look at if you're a veteran listening to my voice. So let's get back to this buyer. So he came in at 240, and I took his offer, knowing full well that I run a risk. I run a risk of this appraiser coming in and not seeing what I see. Now, I firmly believe, if the appraiser takes the two lesser value comps and does the adjustments upward. Oh, by the way, I probably should tell you this too. Bonnie is a trained appraiser. Not only is she a licensed real estate agent, she's a trained appraiser too. So as a result of that, part of the reason she's on my team is because I need somebody that fully understands the mind of an appraiser, because appraisers can make a break your deal. It really can. So this is where we're at. We think there's enough information in the marketplace to support getting this home to an appraisal price of $240. I should say $240,000. But if it only comes in at $225,000, I would sell the property. See, what I'm working on right now is I'm trying to acquire an additional $15,000 of valuation. Now, contractually, I've got it. Contractually, it's there. Contractually, the buyer said he's willing to pay $240,000 for that property. He thinks it's worth it. Contractually, I'm good to go. But because there's a lender involved, that lender wants to make sure that buyer is not biting off more than they can chew. So I've got a very interesting situation here where an appraiser could make me an extra $15,000, or it could just evaporate. Now, I'm real good with the 225 price. I'll be honest with you. I'm good with it. I mean, that was the target Tina and I set. We hit the target. We made the informed decision, sell the asset, take all the proceeds that are coming from that asset, and we're going to add them to funds that we have set aside because we're looking for an apartment community to buy. And this is part of the strategy. If I can get an extra $15,000 out of this deal, I'm going to take it. I don't believe that I'm doing the buyer any harm, because what I agreed to was that I would sell the property to him at the price that he offered. And he believes the price of the property is worth it. Now, he also knows, because he's buying with a VA, that if that appraisal comes in lower, he's actually protected. He does not have to meet the contract price. Now, he could come in with cash difference if he really wanted the house and it doesn't appraise, He could come in with cash difference, but he doesn't have to. He actually has a built-in escape clause. And here's the other thing. Let's say the property appraised for $225. Should I back out of the deal? Should, you know, let's say it appraised for $225. The guy says, yeah, he says, well, after $240, it only appraised $225. I only can pay $225 because I'm doing no money down. I don't have $15,000 extra to come in with. I could say, okay, fine, go away. But then I would have to put the property back on the market, knowing full well that I already have an appraisal in place for a set price, meaning that appraisal could come back up if I sold it to somebody else. And I think I have to actually disclose that. I'm not 100% sure on the law on that, but here's the point. Unless I get a cash buyer that comes in and wants to pay more for the property, or a conventional buyer that's coming in with so much money down, the lender doesn't care what they pay, I'm not going to get anything really more for the property. It's at that point, I'm just chasing things that aren't going to do anything for me. So I believe that this is a really good scenario for Tina and I, because it allows us to dispose of the property. If we can get $15,000 more out of the property, it's already built in. It's built into the contract. Now we just have to have the appraiser go out. Now here's the good news. The one property that I told you about that sold for $259 on the bigger piece of property, it's already closed escrow. So that, and it actually closed escrow like 3 weeks ago. So it's a very, very recent comp. That other property that I told you that sold for $245, okay, that's pending, it's supposed to close escrow Friday. So that information is going to be available to the appraiser. Both of those properties are, in Al's opinion, more comparable to the property that I'm selling than the two other properties that are in my actual neighborhood that are, we'll just say they have some deferred maintenance to them, and we'll leave it at that. So I feel really good getting us to that $240 price. I'm not trying to be greedy. I'm just trying to structure the deal so it makes sense. Oh, and by the way, this should reinforce in your mind the fact that real estate is local. Did you notice throughout the show I was kind of picking on Zillow, then I was, you know, giving them kudos because they deserve kudos. They're not a bad company. They really aren't. They just do some dumb things from time to time. But here's the thing. Everything that I talked about when I was talking about Zillow, did you notice that was like bigger, grander, national kind of numbers? And then when I was talking about this house that I'm selling, none of that national stuff came into play. What came into play was a local real estate market. There is a young man serving the United States Air Force that wants to buy my house. My house happens to be a 5-minute drive from the front gate of the base he has just been assigned to for the next 3 years. Oh, and here's the interesting thing about the Air Force. Air Force people, depending on what they do, okay, I should say Air Force personnel, let's get it correct. Depending on what they do, they can do what's called homesteading. Do you know what that is? Well, homesteading is something where, based on what you do for the military, they're going to keep you in the same place. There are people that actually do 20-year careers in the United States Air Force by homesteading. This guy could potentially be a homesteader who will be living in this house for the years to come, will be growing his family in this house that I made available to him to buy, because that particular property did exactly what it was supposed to do based on the strategy that Tina and I laid out for ourselves. And then as we looked at that asset, we said, it's time to go. And the neat thing about the fact that it's time to go, it might make us an extra $15,000 just because of the coolness of the market. Look, we got to get you started. There's just no other way around this. Go to lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com. Get signed up and let's get you going.
Del Walmsley offers some tips on a better lifestyle.
Even as independent as you are when you own and work in your own business, if you stop working, you're right back to where you were. If your boss cut you off, if you don't get up and go to work, you're not going to earn any money. And so you need to learn how to become interdependent. Now, even after you become interdependent, you're going to start working on something called mastery. Mastery is something that is so different than just doing. When you master something, you are going to be able to anticipate and eliminate all of the problems that would normally occur to the guy just trying to work his way through something. You're in front of the problems, not behind the problems. You've got the thing figured out so well that when you start a new business, it's nothing.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
Information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.